important tradition and really popular thing that we do where we're from. Dancing is just really awesome to get together with the community and see your family dancing and get involved in all that and perform. And so we grew up doing that, and so we just had the idea of taking those dance songs and harmonizing them, and then we work with different musicians and kind of explore that. And so it kind of created this new sound, but our inspiration is from the dancing, and which is in the language.
Philip, you've got a new CD out called Side A, Side B, right?
Yes.
And the concept of the thing is that Side A is a lot of the songs in more or less traditional, should I say Inuit or Eskimo format, basically drumming and singing. And
yeah,
then
exactly.
On Side B, you take the same pieces and interpret them with a little more funk involved.
Yeah, sometimes it's so difficult to explain, you know, what we do with our music, and because when we do the performance and we do the dancing, people get it because they see the dancing, and then we'll go up and then we'll sing a song in a cappella, and you know, kind of have this do up harmony style or work or tribal funk or funk it up or whatever with, you know, other instruments and percussion. But on our previous albums, it was hard to translate the dancing part of it in that traditional side. And so with this album, Side A, Side B, it's two discs. And the first disc, both discs have the same exact songs, the songs themselves, song order. And then the first disc is just drums and vocals and the Inuit drum. And so it's not completely traditional because we still harmonize, but each song, you know, we try to make an arrangement that fits the composition itself. And then the second disc has the same exact song, but with instrumentation. And it was it's kind of a showcase of the collaborations that we have been doing over the years with our good friend Christopher in Copenhagen and the musicians in Denmark, and taking these songs and performing these songs with them and touring the songs. And so it showcases the both sides of you know, our influence and what we do on stage, and we were excited about that.
Philip, I guess I'm curious about one thing, and that is, I mean, I'm excited about your music, and it makes sense to me when I listen to it. I'm wondering how the reception is among traditional Native musicians. Are they accepting of what you're doing?
We've been really fortunate to have to get support from our community from the very beginning, and I think it's, you know, it's just people have different opinions and different views about all kinds of things and our songs, but I think generally everybody really supports what we do. I think a lot of that is because even if, like, some of my, let's say, my uncles or something, it may not be the type of music that they like. They may prefer just the traditional dancing, but they appreciate what we do and the fact that other people like it and that it's a positive thing and that we're having fun and that it's, you know, that it's a positive thing. There's positive energy in it. And so I think for the most part, people kind of see that as the important thing, and that's great, you know, because we do love it and we appreciate, you know, we're honored to do these songs and to tell the stories, and we hope that people like it.
Philip Blanchette from Bamua, hopefully to be on the air or actually in concert here if a miracle occurs and the fog clears at the airport for a brief second while they can land. You guys are actually going to take off at 6 o'clock and hopefully hover out at the point until the last moment and maybe pop in here real quick and do the concert. If it happens, it'll be around 7:30 tonight at the Jack. And stay tuned, folks, to find out what actually happens. Hey, thank you so much for telling us about it. Good luck with the sales of the new album, Side A, Side B, and keep it up.
Yeah, we'll see you guys tonight. And then we do have a website, pamyua.com. It's PAMYUA.
Good enough. Thank you so much, Philip.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions are important members of the state's workforce, from healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants. Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are succeeding in the workplace. The trust encourages Alaska employers to consider ways in which trust beneficiaries and their unique skills can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org.
It's 3:27. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is here to tell us about a program at the State Library called Digital Learning Day. This is coming up, I believe, on Tuesday. Not absolutely certain on the date and time, but my guest is Julie Niederhauser. And Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And I'd also like to introduce Kelly Sorensen from
Hi, Kelly.
Department of EED.
Okay, so tell us about this program, Digital Learning Day. What are we going to learn digitally?
Well, actually, Digital Learning Day is on February 5th, 2014, and teachers and librarians throughout Alaska are joining tens of thousands of teachers and millions of students from all 50 states and the District of Columbia in partnering with Alliance for Excellent Education for the third annual National Digital Learning Day. And Digital Learning Day is a national, a nationwide event to promote the use of digital learning and teaching in classrooms and libraries.
So digital learning meaning learning about digital things or meaning learning by digital media?
Well, actually, it's both. It's incorporating technology and digital literacy. Kelly, do you want to share anything with that?
Yeah, I would say, as she said, it's both of those things. It's kind of celebrating what we're doing with technology in our classrooms and in our libraries and also helping educate on effective ways to do that.
Well, of course it has. I was going to ask if the digital revolution had changed education, but I'd be interested in whether or not you think that there's a difference in delivery by a human being standing up in front of a traditional classroom situation and the use of digital. How do those differences play out?
I think that one is impossible without the other right now in our education system and in our classrooms. So I think you can think of a pencil really as a piece of technology. And I think we get googly-eyed when we think about all these exciting technologies that are out there. But it's really how you use those technology tools that makes you an effective teacher and makes you an effective learner, for that matter, too.
And actually, if folks go to our Digital Learning Day webpage at the Alaska State Library, they will see a wonderful video that was created by the Haynesboro School School District, I guess, about how they've incorporated technology K through 12 to expand and enhance education for students in Haynes. It's fabulously done. And I think it would answer a lot of the questions people may have about how people can use technology in the schools.
So who's the program that you're going to put on Tuesday aimed at?
Well, actually what it is we've asked libraries and schools throughout Alaska to register an event with us on our webpage or to share a video link with us, a two-minute video that they created demonstrating how they've integrated technology in their school library. And so presently we have close to 15 different libraries and schools around Alaska. And this is the second year that the State Library and the Department of EED have partnered on this project, and it continues to grow, and we're very happy about that.
I've done, in the past, a little bit of online education, and it's been an observation of mine that students in the villages are much more comfortable with using particularly video than students in our classrooms here in Juneau. It seems to me like they grab a camera and shoot something because they have to communicate over such a broad range. Have you found that same thing?
I'm not sure. I would say probably. A lot of the districts, the rural districts that we deal with, use a lot of video technology to enhance their learning, and so it makes sense that it's more comfortable for them. And there's a couple of really good examples of ways in which they've been doing that. There's a school district, Kodiak, actually, they teach a music class over video. So it's nice to be able to really extend the education to all those rural communities that wouldn't have otherwise gotten a music class.
You know, one of the things the State Library has been involved in the past couple of years is the AL Video Conferencing Network, where we have 96 different libraries created this video conferencing network so people can get together through video conferencing in real time and share knowledge and experience and information. And it's been fabulous. And a lot of students are using that in order to, they are in the village, but they're taking classes from educators all around the state and around the nation that they otherwise wouldn't have the availability to do that. So it's fantastic.
We have access to that facility here in Juneau.
Absolutely. Yeah. And at the State Library and also at the Juneau Public Library. And on June 11th, there's going to be an OWL open house where we're inviting state agencies, nonprofits, people from the federal government as well to demonstrate the project. So that will be from 2 to 5 at the Juneau Public Library in downtown on February 11th.
Oh, and anyone can come and sit in?
Sure. Yeah. If anyone wants information about that, they should contact me. It's Julie Niederhauser at alaska.gov.
Okay. In the State Library, they're under construction right now. You're going to probably move into the area that will become called the SLAM, I think.
Absolutely. We're really looking forward to bringing all of the division together because presently we are in separate locations. We have the information services is across the atrium from the historical library, and admin is across the atrium from both of us. And we have archives in a separate facility, and of course the State Museum is in a separate facility. So it'll be fabulous to bring us all together, and it's really going to change the way that we work and the product that we can create and provide.
In the course of that construction, how are you incorporating the kind of digital technology that we're talking about with this program?
Well, we still are certainly providing classes. You know, Information Services provides all kinds of instruction for state employees. Library Development, which is actually the part of the State Library that I'm now working for, we provide educational content for public libraries throughout the state, and we do a lot of that online through video conferencing and webinars. And of course, the Historical Library has the wonderful digital archive that they are doing, and they create educational content with that, and they collaborate with other people to provide educational content with that as well.
Well, these are exciting times in the digital world. Thank you so much for telling us a little bit about it, and thank you so much for putting together the program that's coming up.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 31st of January, 2014. It's the birthday of Norman Mailer, Long Branch, New Jersey, 1923. Author of more than 30 books, plays, screenplays, poems, essays, reporting, drafted into the Army in 1944, right after he graduated from Harvard. His experience in the war led to his first novel, The Naked and the Dead, which was his first book to receive universal acclaim and maybe the last, and it was his greatest commercial success as well. His book, The Executioner's Song, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1979. He called it a true life novel, the story of the convicted killer Gary Gilmore, who had killed two men, was sentenced to death against Gilmore's wishes. Lawyers appealed for clemency, and Gilmore himself fought to be executed by a firing squad as soon as possible and got his wish in 1977. The book was the idea of a photographer-journalist named Larry Schiller, who had collaborated with Mailer on a biography of Marilyn Monroe years earlier. Schiller conducted the interviews, went to the execution, shared thousands of pages of transcripts with Mailer so he could write the book, which is a dramatic departure from Mailer's usual style. He wrote very simple, declarative sentences in a somber tone, most of the book refusing to take a position on either the crime or the killer. Joan Didion reviewed The Executioner's Song, called it ambitious to the point of vertigo, said the authentic Western voice, the voice heard in the book, are heard often in life, but only rarely in literature. It's the birthday of Franz Schubert, born in Vienna, 1797, wrote 9 symphonies, many string quartets, piano works, many, many songs, but died at 31, disappointed that he had never written a successful opera. It's the birthday of Thomas Merton, born
born in Prades, France, 1915, author of many books and poems, and also a Trappist monk who wrote his life story in the book The Seven-Story Mountain. And it's the birthday of John O'Hara, short story writer, Pottsville, Pennsylvania, 1905, started as a newspaper reporter, started writing fiction on the side, wrote his first book, Appointment in Samara, in New York, holed up in a hotel, using the bed as a desk, writing all night and sleeping all day. Here's a poem for today by William Stafford, What's in My Journal. Odd things, like a button drawer, mean thing, fish hooks, barbs in your hand, but marbles too, a genius for being agreeable, junkyard crucifixes, voluptuous discards, space for knick-knacks and for Alaska, evidence to hang me or to beatify, clues that lead nowhere, that never connected anyway, deliberate obfuscation, the kind that takes genius, chasms in character, loud omissions, mornings that yawn above a new grave, pages you know exist, but you can't find them, someone's terribly inevitable life story, maybe mine. What's in My Journal by William Stafford. From Crossing Unmarked Snow, published by HarperCollins and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes to 4, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest probably should have his own time slot on the radio station. He's been here enough that he's gotten to be an old hand at this whole thing. Scott Willis is here from AALP, and tonight at 6:30 and again at 8 p.m., Scott's got a really interesting program as the, I guess, the third program in this year's Glacier Visitor Center Fireside Lecture Series. And you're going to be talking about the first Lake Tap hydropower plant, which was installed in 1915. And it's amazing how early Juneau had electric power and telephones. And the 20th century arrived here before it arrived a lot of places in the lower 48.
That's right. It certainly did. And it arrived here because of the large gold mining operations that they had. The mines had capital, and they needed to develop infrastructure as quickly as they could to continue their mining, and so they built the earliest hydro projects in town, and the interesting thing is that some of those are still operating today, 100 years later.
And a Lake Tap hydropower plant. I think I understand what that is, but can you give me a definition here?
The most common way to build a hydro project where you store water so that you can use it all winter long is to put a dam on a stream, something like Salmon Creek Dam, for example.
Right.
But if Mother Nature left you a lake that's at a high elevation, you can use that for your reservoir. You don't need to build a dam as long as you drill a tunnel and tunnel into the side of the lake. Then you use that for your reservoir. And that's what they did at Annex Creek.
So where's Annex Creek? If I had to find it on a map, I'm not sure I could.
Not a lot of people.
I don't walk by there every week.
That's right. Not a lot of people know about it because it's not on the road system here. But if you head down Gastineau Channel and take the first left, you'll go up the Taku Inlet about 8 miles. So
okay.
It's right on the shore of the Taku up there. So you can't drive to it. That's why a lot of people don't know where it is. But there is a neat little hydro project there.
So who built this thing, and how did they know that would work?
It was the Alaska Gastineau Mining Company. This was the company that had the mill out Thane Road. It was Bart Thane's company. And he had a really sharp chief engineer working for the mine, a young fellow, that designed the Salmon Creek Dam. And when they needed more power, Bart Thain said, go find another project. And he sent an exploring party out looking for large streams, I think. And when they followed Annex Creek up, they found a lake up there. And so he got to thinking, you know, we don't need to build a dam. We can just poke a hole in the lake and use the water that's Mother Nature provided.
And the lake refills each year from rain sources, from melt, what?
Exactly. It's the rain and snow that powers a hydro project. So I tell people that Mother Nature fills our fuel tanks every year with the rain and snow. I also tell people that we've found a way to sell rain to citizens of Juneau.
How big around is the hole?
Yeah, the tunnel itself was eight feet wide and 9 feet tall that pierced the lake, and there's probably a bit of a bell mouth there. But that's roughly the size of the tunnel that's bringing that water through and then is put into a pipe and sent on down to the power plant.
And the power plant then has a turbine wheel that turns to generate.
Power plant has
two
little water wheels that are each hooked to a generator. That water jet turns the wheel that turns the generator that makes the electricity.
How much of what you're describing is original equipment?
Much of it is. The tunnel, of course, is original. The valves at the end of the tunnel are original. The riveted steel penstock that comes down to the plant is original. The wheels, I think, are original. The power plant building is original. The generators have been upgraded, and then much of the electronic equipment in the plant is new. But much of it is 98 years old this year.
Is there a way to say how much of our power comes from this particular facility?
There is. In an average year, we get 6 or 7% of the community's power from this Annex Creek power plant.
So there are power lines that run, elevated power lines, I'm assuming, that come from
Most
Annex
of it's
from...
overhead, and it was originally. It comes from Annex Creek. It actually runs up Carlson Creek, over Sheep Mountain, and down Sheep Creek Valley, down into the Thane area.
And that all existed as part of the original?
That's correct, because they were trying to get that power to the mill at Thane.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using that same line. Now, many of the towers and much of the wire has been replaced, but some of the transmission towers are original also.
How big an increase in efficiency or however you would rate it did the Thane mill get from getting the additional power, do you know?
They were able to increase their production by about an additional 25% by adding the Annex Creek plant. And that was important to them. They needed to mill a lot of ore to be efficient,
yeah.
And they had a very efficient milling process. They were restricted by the amount of power they had. So that's why they wanted to add this second project to their power system with the Salmon Creek.
This was really the important aspect of mining in Juneau. This was a very low yield mining operation, something like 10 tons to the ounce, I think,
or more. We'll be talking about that tonight. But because it was such a low grade of ore, they had to mine a lot of ore, and they had to do it very cheaply and efficiently to make it pay. And they were able to do that both at Treadwell and at Gastineau, at least for a time, and the AJ.
Yeah. So a wonderful aspect of Juneau history tonight, 6:30 and 8 p.m. It's the same program. It repeats, so you can either show up at 6:30 and see the whole show, or you can come at 8 p.m. and see the whole show. These are all out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. For those of you that go out there in the summertime and walk up all of the steps and everything like that, there is an elevator. You go on around past where the steps are, and you can go into the little kind of cave-like entrance there, and there's an elevator inside that'll get you up to the top floor.
That's correct, and that's good to note. I was there yesterday, and it's pretty slick out there, so the stairs can be treacherous, so the elevator's a good idea.
Not to mention the sidewalk. So a piece of advice if you are going tonight because of the temperatures and because of the situation, if you have cleats, put them on, because we've had people really had to shuffle along those sidewalks. It is a glacier after all. it gets glacier weather out there all the time. So be sure that you are prepared to approach the building in some comfort and leave the building in some comfort. And they also have cookies and coffee and tea up top.
As Lori Craig reminded us last Friday, Friday. It's an interesting show and a cheap date on Friday night.
There you go. There you go. And Scott Willis, thank you so much for doing all of the massive research you've had to do to hang this whole thing together. Appreciate it. We'll see you tonight between our 6:30 or 8 o'clock at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center Fireside Lecture Series.
Thank you.
Our music right now is by Gold Street Music, and they're doing a concert this Saturday. And, of course, the song is carefully chosen so that it has a bearing on our topic.
Well, you can't get power from Smitty's Sham unless you build a great big dam. Well, you can't get power from Smitty's Sham unless you build a great big dam. Ain't gonna blow me down no more. 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 Well, a dam's gotta have a big power line so folks in town can plug in fine. Well, a dam's gotta have a big power line so folks in town can plug in fine. Ain't gonna blow line can't rise all the way to town, cause the Taku wind might blow it down. Well, the line can't run all the way to town, cause the Taku wind might blow it down. Is a mighty fine tool, but it costs so much, they'll turn you blue. Well, a submarine cable is a mighty fine tool, but it costs so much, they'll turn you blue. Ain't gonna blow me down no more.
Well, the song's about Snettisham, but tonight's presentation is about the Annex Creek Dam. The Gold Street Music Concert has a whole bunch of different people. Pat Henry, whom you heard singing the Snettisham song, will be there. The Pride Ensemble will be there. Keith Heller, Deb Spencer, Joe Emerson, the Travis Croteau, Libby Stringer, Patrick Murphy, Patricia Hull with Mike Moss. This is all at Resurrection Lutheran Church. It's Saturday at 7:30. It's $5 at the door. So a great opportunity to do just that. We had a great opportunity, and with the fog, it sort of drifted away from us and is unfortunately not going to happen. Andy Hirsch is here from the library and going to tell us about, first of all, the thing that was that got canceled, and then a little bit more about library technology. Hi. Welcome aboard.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
So originally, tomorrow, we were going to have an award-winning author, Susan Power, and an actor, Galway McCullen, come in and talk about the new play that they're writing, and it's called The Rape Culture Project. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to land due to the fog, so they will not be there. So instead, we're going to talk about maybe some of the other library programs or technology or stuff that the library has all the time.
So you're not going to have a program?
We are not having a program tomorrow night.
Okay, good. So if you were planning on coming to the Rape Culture Project program between 6 and 7:30 tomorrow night at the downtown library, you can certainly come down to the downtown library.
We're closed.
Yeah, but we're closed, so don't make a big deal of it. But that program, unfortunately, had to be canceled. So what we're going to talk about instead, as Andy said, is some exciting things that are happening at the library. Two programs that I wanted to talk about is, first of all, some new technology, and the other one, which I'm fascinated with, is the Blind Date with a Book program, which I understand you were the one who came up with this idea.
Well, it has been done at other libraries in the country, so I can't take full credit,
okay.
But It is, I believe, the first time we've done it here, and it's super fun. And there's all of these books that I've wrapped up in paper. You can't tell what they are. And the whole idea about it is to take a blind date with a book. Take a chance on something that you may not have picked out any other way. Or some of these books have terrible covers, or they're old. Anyway, so what you do is you check it out. You take it home with you. You read it. And there's a rate your date slip inside. You return it to the library. And the program's going to run all the way through the end of February. And let's see, most of the books are either something that a librarian has read and enjoyed. We pulled books that are like really famous authors, and we pulled their not very famous works, so you may not have heard of them. And we also pulled a lot of books that were nominated for awards but didn't actually win. So a lot of books, you know, if they won the Pulitzer Prize, they, you know, they're on a bunch of lists, and they have medallions on the front. And these are books that were nominated.
Those didn't get picked.
Didn't win. So okay. You may not have heard of them.
Right. So the way this works, you go into the library, mm-hmm. and up at the front desk, when you go to check out any other books that you might have, there are usually one or two books present there. And they're wrapped up in lovely wrapping paper, hand-drawn wrapping paper, as a matter of fact. And you can choose. And you can choose on shape, or you can choose on weight, or you can, I don't know.
Hardback versus paperback. Yeah.
Do you allow people to, can they?
To touch. They can touch, but they can't peek.
Can they hold it up to their ear
they
and see if it rattles?
They can shake it if they want.
Okay. And then once you've taken your book, there's a little slip of paper inside that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the
rate your date sheet. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so basically, we just ask, did you enjoy this date? Would you date the author again? And do you have any comments you'd like to give us? And if you return it, and it's totally optional, you can take all the books and never return the slips if you want. But if you do return it to one of the public libraries, you'll be entered for a $25 gift card to go on a real date, so at the movie theater.
Well, wonderful. So I didn't realize there was a prize.
There is. Prize drawing.
I was telling you before we started, the date that I chose turned out to be a 19th century mystery novel, and it's a tough date, let me tell you. Because as we go from place to place, we describe the leaves on the trees, we describe the birds in the trees, we describe the grass, the flowers, and everything like that. So it's I'm just about a third of the way through the book, and that's taken me through 2 weeks. So
do you want to know a secret?
What's that?
Unlike a real blind date, nobody will know if you close it and leave.
Well,
no repercussions at all.
No repercussions at all. Now, my wife is on her second blind date. says that somehow you're psychic. Her statement was that somehow you knew what book she was going to pick because she was really pleased with her first date.
Oh, I'm glad.
So she went in for a second one. So anyway, folks, this is kind of fun to do, and the library is coming up with a lot of fun things. Now, turning our heads to technology once again. You just did a Rent-A-Geek program, mm-hmm. which allowed people to get with you and get assistance in using the electronics technology, the online technologies and like that at the libraries that are increasingly present. We were just a moment ago talking to folks from the State Library here, and they were talking about the video conferencing facility, which is now in place at two of our libraries, I think, here in town.
All three of the public libraries have them, the State Library and the University.
Right. So this gives us the opportunity, for instance, the TED Talks are coming in on them and like that. There's just mm-hmm. a huge range of video outreach that we can tune into now.
Exactly.
Yeah. When are those available? When do you have regular shows that people can count on coming to?
Well, let's see. The equipment is available at all of the public libraries, and so they're available at the hours that the library are open. So what you would do is you would call me or any of the library branches, and you would say things like, I want to meet up with some people at the Haynes Library. Can you set that up for me? And I say, great, when do you want to do it? Sure, the room's available. And then we contact the Haynes Library, and the Haynes Library says, why, that's great. And we set up a video conference for the two libraries or any other library.
A club or an organization could actually expand their meeting to the region.
That
through
is
this
correct.
Process. Okay.
And I believe there are 97 libraries in Alaska that are set up with this technology.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a wonderful possibility. I've been a member of an organization that wanted to have regional meetings. But beyond that, there are a large part of the collection now from all of the libraries in the world, really, is moving toward digital.
We support that. We actually have 3 or 4 different online book repositories, and they all have slightly different methods. And everybody can access them as long as they have a library card. So through the state library, we participate in one which is called Listen Alaska, and they have online ebooks and audiobooks. And these are a lot of your popular fiction and nonfiction. So your New York Times bestsellers, you can get it as a book or as something to listen to. And there's an app that you can get on any of your devices. It's called Overdrive Media Console for anybody who wants to download it at home. And you can also access it from a PC or a dedicated e-reader. Another one we have is called Freeding, and that one works on a slightly different method where all of the books are available to download all the time. And it's generally, it's a smaller service, so instead of thousands of books which are available on Listen Alaska, there's maybe 1 or 2,000, a much smaller number. And then our third one is called eBrary, and that's an academic service. And so if you needed, it has a lot of textbooks, it has a lot of things that would overlap with the university. And so what I've been doing is I've been helping people register their devices and sign up and be able to access these from home.
Outstanding. So a lot of these new resources really require somebody that knows how to use them to kind of get you going, and sometimes because it's a little complex to get this to happen on your computer. And if that's the case and you need a little help, you can always contact Andy Hirsch at the libraries.
Mm-hmm. My direct line is 586-0442.
Wonderful.
Or you can call any of the library branches and be like, I need to talk to your technology person, and they'll transfer you to my desk.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much for coming to KTOO today, and thank you so much. One more quick time, the program, which was scheduled for 6 to 7:30 Saturday at the Downtown Library, the Rape Culture Project, has had to be canceled because of the fog.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay. We were rebroadcast on K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. K201 AM rebroadcasts us in Gustavus. K220 BT in Hoonah. K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. And in Juneau, we're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Thank you very much for listening. We've had a number of cancellations because of the fog. If you were going to something tonight, call them and make sure it's going to happen.